There are very few pandemics that have lasted this long. So the comparison to wars that last a very long time is a good one.
The mental weight of COVID. It's Wednesday, July 7th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, more refugees flee unrest. Digs against Chinese coal mining. Indonesian inclusion. Hot times in the U.S. West. Plans to counter climate change. It's all on today's VOA Asia. As Australia's biggest city, Sydney, remains in lockdown, psychologists are warning that the prolonged mental health consequences of COVID-19 will be like those that are felt after a war. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Experts say coronavirus lockdowns anywhere in the world can trigger stress, irritability, fear, and fatigue. There can be a disconnection from extended family and friends, causing loneliness. Uncertainty is another corrosive factor. In Australia, mental health charities estimated that about a third of people in Melbourne suffered some sort of depression during the nation's longest and strictest lockdown last year. Researchers also found that lockdowns are making some Australian children too anxious to go to school. Life in Australia was beginning to return to normal. But recently, the highly contagious Delta variant was detected in several states and territories, threatening progress. Lockdowns were imposed in Sydney, Perth, Brisbane and Darwin, subjecting millions of Australians to stay-at-home orders. Professor Susan Russell is a cognitive neuropsychologist at Swinburne Centre for Mental Health. She compares mental health consequences of the coronavirus crisis to a conflict.
There are very few pandemics that have lasted this long. So the comparison to wars, especially wars that last a very long time, is a good one. During the conflict time, so during the pandemic time, it elevated stress and anxiety, loneliness, confusion, poorer quality of life, all the things that we're seeing at the moment.
Mental health experts have said anxiety will haunt many Australians in the future, as uncertainty surrounds a slow vaccination rollout and the likelihood that international borders will stay closed for another year, separating families from relatives overseas. The lockdowns in Perth, Brisbane and Darwin were lifted in recent days, but Sydney, Australia's most populous city, remains under a stay-at-home order until at least Saturday. Authorities are racing to contain a COVID-19 outbreak linked to a limousine driver thought to have been infected with the Delta variant after transporting an international flight crew at Sydney Airport. Residents in lockdown can leave their homes for work, to buy groceries, to exercise, care for a relative, or to receive a coronavirus vaccine. Australia has recorded just under 31,000 COVID-19 infections since the pandemic began. 910 people have died. Only about 7% of the population of 25 million are fully vaccinated. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
The pandemic has taken its toll on many of us. We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and you can find us at our website, voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Asia Trade Pact draws U.S. allies toward China. Deadly chemical fires at Thai factory forced thousands to evacuate. Tibetan spiritual leader Dalai Lama celebrates 86th birthday. Cambodian cadets at American military academies lose U.S. funding. Japan considers plan to limit spectators at Olympics opening ceremony. You'll find these and many more stories with expanded coverage and much more at Facebook at VOA Asia. Also, we invite you to stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The United Nations Refugee Agency is reporting the number of people forcibly displaced last year by wars, violence, persecution, and human rights violations hit a record high of 82.4 million. That's 4% more than in 2019. The UNHCR has just released its 2020 Global Trends Report. Lisa Schlein tells us more for VOA from Geneva.
This is the ninth consecutive year that forced displacement figures have continued to rise. Even lockdowns and border closures because of the coronavirus pandemic have not stopped people from fleeing for their lives in the face of war and atrocities. Of the more than 82 million forcibly displaced, 26.4 million are refugees who have crossed international borders in search of protection. Most of the rest are people displaced within their own countries because of conflict and violence. UN High Commissioner for Refugees Filippo Grandi says the number of internally displaced people has doubled over the past 10 years.
We're now in excess of 1% of humanity being forcibly displaced. And one of the many figures that to me is quite interesting, is striking, is that 42% of these people are children.
The report finds more than two-thirds of all refugees who have fled abroad come from just five countries: Syria, Venezuela, Afghanistan, South Sudan, and Myanmar. For the seventh consecutive year, Turkey has hosted the largest number of refugees, followed by Colombia, Pakistan, Uganda, and Germany. Grandi says new crises that have caused fresh displacements include northern Mozambique, where violence by armed groups, poverty, climate change and other factors have displaced up to 700,000 people. He says violence in countries in the Central Sahel, including Burkina Faso, Niger, and Mali, has prompted 750,000 people to flee their homes.
And then, of course, Ethiopia, where the Tigray crisis has provoked up to, we're not even sure about that, up to 1 million additional internally displaced people, in addition to about 50 to 60,000 that have crossed the border into Sudan.
High Commissioner Grandi says the global trend for displacement crises in 2021 is not looking good. In the first 6 months of this year, he says very few refugees have returned home and protracted refugee crises have stagnated. At the same time, he says new crises are arising, churning out new refugees and internally displaced people faster than solutions can be found. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Happening now in Asia, more than 1,000 soldiers and rescue workers joined an increasingly desperate search for survivors in a Japanese resort town devastated by a landslide 4 days ago. Four people have been confirmed dead, 24 others remain missing. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We've reached the middle of our week. We're glad to have you with us on VOA Asia. Conservationists in Zimbabwe are trying to rally opposition to a Chinese coal mining project that's operating in the district with the country's biggest national park. Critics say locals and wildlife will be affected, and they are urging authorities to move away from coal production toward renewable energies. Columbus Mafungam reports from Zimbabwe's Wange district.
Most Dinde villagers in Wange district say they are opposed to the coal mining project by BEIFA Investments, but many are unwilling to speak up for fear of retaliation. About 600 families fear being displaced if the coal project goes ahead. One of them is Maurice Sevanda.
At the same time, fearing that any time I can be evicted. Secondly, our grazing areas. We've got a river called Inyantu, that's where we get water. It's our main source of water. So definitely when this mine succeeds, my fear again is that toxic acids might be found in the river.
Other villagers are worried that the project will take away grazing land for their cattle and wildlife. But Beifa Investments continues with its exploration project. Zimbabwe's government says Dinde people were consulted before the company was allowed to start mining. Amunkela Sidanke is the education and publicity manager for the government's environmental management agency. She says an environmental impact assessment EIA report addressed and cleared all Dinde's concerns.
Their fears, they are all taken care of. In fact, as long as the EIA was done, it's being monitored by the agency, so nothing is going to be done which is outside what the agreement was in the EIA for exploration.
Farai Maguhu is the director of the Center for Natural Resource Governance, a local NGO. The group is opposed to the Dinde coal mining project, partly because there are no clear plans on where the villagers will be taken if they are displaced. That's not all. Maguhu says coal mining undermines Zimbabwe's plans to build a green economy and to reduce carbon emissions by 33% by 2030.
But that will not happen as long as the country continue to invest in dirty energy, as what is about to happen in Dinde. We will not allow the government to continue talking left and then walking right.
Sibandam, like most villagers around here, says he does not know what tomorrow will bring. The villagers fear that more coal projects will be approved and encroach into Hwange National Park, the country's largest wildlife sanctuary. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Hwange, Zimbabwe.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello online or on your smartphone. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. Hong Kong police say they arrested 9 people, 6 of whom are secondary school students, on suspicion of engaging in terrorist activity after uncovering an attempt to make explosives and plant bombs across the city. You'll find this and all the big stories through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, sexual and gender minorities continue to suffer discrimination and harassment around the world. But in Yogyakarta, Indonesia, some transgender women are finding solace in religious teachings, as we hear from VOA's Rendy Wixana.
In Yogyakarta, on the Indonesian island of Java, Sinta Ratri sensed a need among her community.
We are human beings with the same basic needs. We need food, we need housing, we need entertainment, and we even have spiritual needs.
Bahkan kebutuhan rohani untuk beribadah.
This prompted her to found the Al-Fatah School back in 2008, a center where transgender women like herself can study the Muslim faith and also provide a safe space for basic practices like prayer.
Most times when us trans women join a congregational prayer in a public space, people get uncomfortable. We get uncomfortable, and the congregation too. People start whispering. We got bullied. Children make fun of us.
Even such in a safe space, congregational prayer also provides a challenge for transgender women. The prayer is led by a male congregant called the imam. And worshippers are divided between male and female congregants.
When it comes to prayer, there are two approaches for trans women. Some prefer to wear male attire to pray. Some prefer to wear women's attire. Most of our members prefer the male attire. We let them choose whatever they feel comfortable praying in.
Sitarate herself presents as female during religious rituals. As does Ruli Malai, a member of the congregation.
I believe the value of a human being is not determined by what they wear, nor what their sexual orientation is, but rather how they behave, how they act, their good deeds for God, and how they behave to others and the universe.
Studies in Al-Fatah are led by voluntary clerics, such as Arif Muhammad Safri, a lecturer in a renowned university in Yogyakarta.
I would like people to first understand that religion should provide comfort to anyone, including to our trans women friends. We need to stay away from stigma. Forget what's halal or allowed and haram or forbidden for a while. What I introduce to them is the religion that shall bring them comfort.
Like transgender communities in many countries, trans women in Indonesia are often marginalized. With limited access to education and jobs, many rely on sex work. Rather than judge them, Safri says he provides religious teachings that are more practical for their daily worships, including the five daily prayers that require physical cleansing beforehand.
Some of our friends here are sex workers. I began thinking perhaps they didn't know the rules for ablution before prayer. Most members also lack knowledge on how to practice Muslim prayer. This is the part of religion that I introduced to them.
Al-Fatah now has 63 members, and every Sunday, they come together to study the Quran and also learn more about Islam. An oasis of community and empowerment in an often harsh, largely conservative society. From Yogyakarta, Indonesia, Radhi Wicaksana, VOA News.
Making headlines in Asia, heavy casualties were inflicted on the Taliban following airstrikes and ground attacks by Afghan security forces on the outskirts of Faizabad City, according to a spokesman for the provincial governor. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, President Joe Biden met last week with cabinet and emergency officials and remotely with Western governors to discuss the heat wave, wildfires, and drought currently in the U.S. West. Each poses a threat in different communities. And as VOA's Mike O'Sullivan reports, an Idaho rancher is trying to keep his farm alive despite a lack of water.
Amid record high heat, blamed for several deaths in Washington State and Western Canada, President Joe Biden conferred with officials and Western governors. Meanwhile, in Shoshone, Idaho, farmer and cattle rancher Carl Pendleton is feeling the effects of the changing climate. Pendleton also heads a company that operates an irrigation system. While some farmers have access to underground water, this system is the only source of water for his farm.
Well, we're in the bottom of the Richfield Canal. Normally this water, standing here, water would be at least up to my neck, maybe up to the top of my head.
But in places, it's bone dry after a winter with little rain or snow in the nearby mountains. Melting snow usually replenishes the water system in summer. This reservoir typically starts the season with more than 235 million cubic meters of water. It started with less than one quarter of that this year.
Why we have endured many short water years. It's very uncommon that we don't have water to get us at least to mid-July. And we were turned off. We exhausted our resource on the 10th of June this year.
It's the driest year in this water district since 1955. A meager alfalfa and grain crop means Pendleton's cattle won't have enough feed.
Why we've chosen rather than buy hay or truck cattle to some place where there is feed. Why in my case we've decided to sell this livestock.
and run a more limited operation than his family has done since they came here in the 1940s. Pendleton says the American farm system is diversified and resilient, but government, which provides agricultural subsidies, has a role to play where the food supply is threatened.
We certainly don't want to be welfare children out here. We'd rather get our money in the marketplace, but if you want to preserve our food supply, I think there's a necessary investment there.
A buffer for struggling small farms like his to stay in business. With Natasha Mozgovaya in Shoshone, Idaho, Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News in Los Angeles.
Amid the heat, President Biden set a 2030 goal of reducing U.S. greenhouse gas emissions by half. His pledge to a virtual summit of world leaders back in April has been welcomed by those hit hardest by climate change and looking for as much quick action as possible. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has the quick summary.
Scientists point to climate change as the reason for the increase in the number of extreme weather events. NASA's senior climate advisor Gavin Schmidt says the problem starts with rising temperatures.
As the planet warms, the ocean absorbs that heat, and that's causing the ocean to expand. So that fills the basins more and more. But of course, as we're warming, we're also melting ice. We're melting ice in mountain areas. Glaciers are retreating. All of that water is effectively ending up in the ocean.
Schmidt says the planet's rising temperatures lead to drier land, which in turn leads to wildfires like this one in Mexico. Edgar Godoy oversees Mexico for the Rainforest Alliance, a nonprofit group working to protect nature while helping farmers. He says fires, floods, and melting glaciers have become routine.
And every year in Mexico, as I think in the whole world, we are always saying, oh, this was the hottest year in the last 5 years. But it's happening year after year after year. So this is something that is not changing, no?
About one-third of Mexico City's 20 million residents is affected by water shortages. Under near-constant threat of drought, Godoy says farmers can't depend on their crops alone.
As they don't have like the income that they were expecting from a specific crop, maybe they will need to go to the forest or the rainforest and clear cut it to sell some wood or some other things that are having impact on deforestation or degradation of forest and rainforest.
As trees disappear from clear cutting and their roots no longer hold dirt in place, landslides and flooding increase. Intan Fardinatri of the Rainforest Alliance in Indonesia says these natural disasters hit hardest those who make a living off the land.
The agriculture rural community, it's always like they are in a very remote area. And by having landslide, you know, damaging the infrastructure, so they are even remote than before, isolated.
Fardinatri says the erratic weather patterns have cut Indonesia's coffee production in half, and the country's cocoa and coffee farmers have watched their livelihoods shrink.
When they were young, it wasn't like this, and now the soil getting exhausted, soil is dry.
She says the clash between economic development and protecting the environment may make those taken for granted staples increasingly unsustainable to grow. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Continue with us online at Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We thank you so much for joining us today, and we thank the team that helps bring you this program each and every day. Service Chief Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, Amy Hybels, and Chris Cascajo. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a super day ahead. Be safe. Be well.